now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. The photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you are listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today is Wednesday, January the 4th, 2017. Happy New Year! Woohoo! Noisemakers, fireworks going off in the background. Very interesting. Was it a day or two after New Year's Day? There was a period of time when the days and hours of a particular day were really, really stretched out. It seemed like the hours, and day or days were lasting for an abnormally long period of time. Now, could this be post New Year's Eve / New Year's Day hangover when nothing was stirring, not even a hungover mouse? Could that have been the reason why everything seemed so quiet and everything seemed to be at a standstill? I mean, I just lay in bed and watch Netflix, watched a few episodes of a show I started watching, but I just noticed how quiet it was. Almost reminded me of the earthquake weather quiet that would precede an earthquake in California. But it wasn't just the quiet and the absence of noise, but it was just how long everything seemed to stretch out. Because I'm laying there in bed watching these episodes. I started watching Van Helsing, actually, which is on Netflix. Vampire apocalypse, vampire meltdown kind of thing. You got to check it out for yourself. Won't spoil it for you. On that particular day, a few episodes of Van Helsing. And then I check out the clock and I did a double take. And it was only like about like 8:30 in the morning, 9 a.m. max. And I'm thinking, this is odd. I've been laying here. I've watched a number of episodes, three or four or more, of Van Helsing. Now, I do usually get up around 5:30 a.m. And then, depending on what's going on, I either go back to sleep or I stay up and whatnot. And so, this was New Year's Day. Yeah, it was New Year's Day. So I go back to, you know, I do my morning stuff, and then I don't even know if I had a morning cuppa, but I went back to bed, and then I whacked on the telly, started watching Van Helsing. Watched a number of episodes. And I watched some other episodes of another show, too. I kind of like to mix it up. Sometimes I'll do a marathon, and sometimes I'll watch certain other episodes just to keep things interesting and not get locked in or fixated on a certain subject. So all told, I figured, shoot, we should be pushing 10 a.m., 10:30 maybe, right? But no, it was still like 8:30, 9 a.m. And so I keep watching more episodes and more episodes. And shoot, now it's only about 9:45, 10:30, right? It just seems like the day should have progressed a lot further than it did. Again, it could be post New Year's Eve, collective consciousness hangover. Right? Not a creature was stirring, not even a hungover mouse. or something else was going on. What I've found is that people that are aware of the manipulation of time, that are aware that they are multidimensional quantum beings by nature, they're more tuned into these time glitches, time anomalies, fluctuations in time, manipulations of time. I think I mentioned in a previous commentary how it was noted by certain people that something was going on with the time. And I mentioned that I was sitting on the porch and suddenly, you know, I had weird weather stuff and it was starting to rain a little bit when the sun was still out and things had gotten a little quiet and et cetera, et cetera. And right around that same time, one of my Facebook friends was having some weird kind of power surge issue. And then when she checked her cell phone, the time was like 6 or 7 hours ahead of what it should have been. When, if there had been a power outage or whatever, the phone should still have gotten reset to whatever the local time is in that locale, right? That didn't happen. And right around the time that was going on, I was having this weird thing go on with time. And the people around me were having a similar feeling that at that moment, time was being messed with. Maybe they're just getting a head start on the new year. Who knows? 2017, let's start mucking around with time, right? So I just thought I'd throw it out there to see if any of you had noticed that also. Right around New Year's Day, the 2nd of January, things still seem to be kind of slow, if you ask me, because I'd gotten kind of into a mode where the days and the hours and the weeks just slip by like sands through the fingers, right? You look up, it's 7 a.m., you look up again, it's 10:30, look up again, it's 2 p.m. It's just like, go, go, go. That's what it's been like. And other people have noticed this too. The illusionary time frequency is accelerating, is speeding up. But for whatever reason, and it's still early days yet, still very early in the new year, at least I and some others have noticed that time seems to have slowed down a little bit. So let's see how that plays out. And I'd welcome any comments from any of you out there if you noticed anything similar. Okay. Now, before I start talking about deeper issues of aliens, UFOs, and in particular, disruptors in the UFO community, disruptors in the UFO field, because that subject has reared its ugly head again, I'm going to talk about things of a more surface-level nature. And remember, everything that I mentioned that has to do with quote-unquote surface-level activities, surface-level things, is merely an outward manifestation of hyperdimensional manipulation, all right? There's really no such thing as, when you come right down to it, when you get right down to brass tacks, there really is no such thing as surface-level stuff, because the forces working through those humans or human hybrids on the surface that are causing all these changes, that are creating all this mischief, well, the forces working through them are non-human to begin with, and they're coming, often as not, these intelligences and malign influences are coming from a reality that intersects our own at certain points, and some of these beings are hyperdimensional. They can freely go from one dimension to another, and some of them are extraterrestrial, right? So when I say surface level, I just keep all that in mind. But I thought it would be a good idea to talk about how this whole concept of currency, which is a big-time illusion, the whole fiat currency monetized debt scam is as big an illusion as can be, because it's not real. But I've been keeping track of certain trends, and one of them is what's been going on in India and what's been going on in Venezuela and probably some other places. Here we are, one of my favorite websites, globalresearch.ca, and the article is, the headline is, "A Well-Kept Open Secret, Washington is Behind India's Brutal Demonetization Project." And let me read a few sentences here. In early November, without warning, the Indian government declared the two largest denomination bills invalid, abolishing over 80% of circulating cash by value. Amidst all the commotion and outrage this caused, nobody seems to have taken note of the decisive role that Washington played in this. That is surprising, as Washington's role has been disguised only very superficially. U.S. President Barack Obama has declared the strategic partnership with India a priority of his foreign policy. China needs to be reined in. In the context of this partnership, the U.S. government's development agency, USAID, U.S. Agency for International Development, a longtime front for nefarious CIA activities. So let me reread that sentence. China needs to be reined in. In the context of this partnership, the U.S. government's development agency, USAID, CIA front, has negotiated cooperation agreements with the Indian Ministry of Finance. One of these has the declared goal to push back the use of cash in favor of digital payments in India and globally. Underline globally three times, italicized. On November 8, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced that the two largest denominations of banknotes could not be used for payments anymore with almost immediate effect. Owners could only recoup their value by putting them into a bank account before the short grace period expired. The amount of cash that banks were allowed to pay out to individual customers was severely restricted. Almost half of Indians have no bank account, and many do not even have a bank nearby. The economy is largely cash-based. Thus, a severe shortage of cash ensued. Those who suffered the most were the poorest and most vulnerable. They had additional difficulty earning their meager living in the informal sector or paying for essential goods and services like food, medicine, or hospitals. Chaos and fraud reign well into December. Full stop. Now, when I read that, alarm bells began ringing, because I remember reading somewhere before that another country in Latin America had started taking large denomination bills out of circulation. So I started doing a little web search. Sure enough, our friend over at Zero Hedge, Tyler Durden, rule number one, you will not talk about the Fight Club, right? Tyler Durden. He wrote an article on December 11, 2016, Maduro Stunner, Venezuela Eliminates Half Its Paper Money After Pulling Largest Bill from Circulation. And let me read a few sentences again. You might have gathered my idea of few may not jibe with other people's idea of few. I'll read a lot of sentences. How about that? Having observed the economic chaos to emerge as a result of India's shocking November 8th demonetization announcement, and perhaps confident it can do better, today President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela, Latin America's most distressed economy, mired in an economic crisis and facing hyperinflation, likewise shocked the nation when he announced on state TV that just like India, Venezuela would pull its highest denominated 100 Bolivar bill, which is worth about two U.S. cents on the black market, from circulation over the next 72 hours, ahead of the introduction of new, higher-value notes, as large as 20,000. I have decided to take out of circulation bills of 100 Bolivars in the next 72 hours, Maduro said. We must keep beating the mafias, right? Critics immediately slammed the move, which Maduro said was needed to combat contraband of the bills at the volatile Colombia-Venezuela border, as economically nonsensical, adding that there would be no way to swap all the 100 boulevard bills in circulation in the time the president has allotted. Indeed, if India is any example, Venezuela, whose economy is far worse than that of India, the world's fastest growing emerging market, may have just signed its own economic death warrant. And a couple of points to ponder here. The reason Maduro is taking the 100 boulevard note out of circulation is because they want to create larger notes. Because hyperinflation has kicked in over there in Venezuela. One of the founding members of OPEC, right? They have their own oil, they have their own resources, but somehow, some way, they're basically what's referred to these days by the talking heads as a failed state, right? Argentina, once the byword for rich people in South America, due to Chicago School economics and IMF manipulation, for a while was basically turned into a basket case. And we've seen this over and over again. So by taking the boulevards out of circulation and then cranking out 20,000 boulevard notes, well, that saves the poor people having to push a wheelbarrow to a store filled with boulevards, right? So if you have a 20,000 boulevard note, that's a lot better than having a huge pile of 100 boulevard notes, I guess. But it's symptomatic of the state of the economy there after it's been raked over the coals by the international bankster community, the IMF, and all the rest of them. Venezuela, a once very prosperous country. And let's go back to India, right? Now, India, as that article pointed out, it's a country where people make bargains and they make deals basically in a cash-on-hand basis. A lot of people don't have banks there, and a lot of towns and villages don't have banks. So everything is done by the average person, the average people, on a cash carry basis. So by taking all this money out of circulation, what they've done basically is they've stripped the lower classes, and India, of course, is an extreme example of a caste society, right? What they've done is they've stripped the already suffering poor of what's left of their buying power. And so that's going to really impact the local economies, the local farmers, etc., etc. This is a country, India, has already been raked over the coals by the likes of Monsanto. We've heard all the stories of the bankrupted cotton farmers in India drinking the Monsanto insecticide, if you want to call it that, and committing mass suicide, all these Indian farmers, because they played along with the Monsanto scheme of things and started planting the Monsanto genocide seed, which only yields one bad crop and compels the farmers to always buy more seed. And a lot of these farmers went bankrupt, and so as a form of protest, they drank Monsanto poisons and killed themselves. So that was already happening. And then this happens, where India has decided to take their large notes out of circulation. And note how they talk about how this is, excuse me, a stepping stone towards a digital based economy, i.e. computer-based digitized economy, credit debit. Once again, those crazy conspiracy theorists are right. They're going to do away eventually with cash, and everyone will be compelled to utilize a digital biometric-based credit non-credit system. And as David I pointed out years ago, this has this has profound implications for personal freedom. And we already see, especially in America, how the militarized police are going after food communes. They're attacking people because they have the audacity to grow vegetables in their own yards. Oh, how collectivized of them, right, to do such a thing. Oh, you're growing tomatoes. Send in a SWAT team. Yes, how collectivized is that, right? So already in other countries, taking the large bills out of circulation, in some countries, they're taking out the more numerous, what used to be a rather large denomination, and creating bills in the thousands, denominations in the thousands, because of hyperinflation is set in. And it's a stepping stone towards crashing the financial system, because it's the only way to bring in the credit, debit, digital system, is by doing away, out with the old, in with the new. There's no other way to do it. And they've already gotten young people, especially these millennials and the Generation Xers, etc., etc., they've already got them addicted to their iPhones and Androids, and they're used to doing everything on their phones, banking and everything on their phones. So it's going to be no biggie to them. They're just going to roll with it, right? Oh, biometrics, you need my thumbprint, you need my retina scan, no biggie, here I am, you know. Oh, you need to like tape barcodes on my forehead, no biggie. Way back when, my colleague Eve Lorgan and I co-wrote an article called Unmasking the Disruptors in the UFO Community, or the UFO Field, I can't remember off the top of my head. Unmasking the Disruptors in the UFO Community, let's say. And it was all about identifying those discordant, troublesome meddlers, disruptors, troublemakers in the UFO field. Often as not, these people, males and females, were a host for one or more negative entities. Because these people are, as Tom Montauk would say, an organic portal, a negative organic portal entry. They're a physical, walking, talking, organic portal, which allows all these negative entities to work through them to cause all kinds of mayhem, mischief, discordance. And what happens is, these people are pretty much prepped from birth to do exactly what they're doing, causing nothing but trouble. And nowadays, of course, with the internet, their malign influence is all over the place. Before, they used to have to be either in your face causing trouble, or often as not, behind your back causing trouble. Gossiping, intriguing, lying about you, turning people against you by telling them lies about you. Oh, so-and-so said this about you. So-and-so said that about you. All lies. They have what some of the fundies, i.e. fundamentalists, would have called in the old days, the spirit of accusation, right? That's what they do. That's how they roll. Because these negative entities working through them, remember, always remember, cannot stand serenity, harmony, plenitude, happiness, joy. That's all like garlic to a vampire. They don't like that. They want to create discordance, disharmony, unpleasantness, vulgarity, innuendo, intrigue, backstabbing, all that stuff. That's what their stock and trade is, especially in the UFO field. The UFO field has always been characterized by egos and empires. Ego is underlined three times in bold letters. Because the easiest thing to do is for the aliens, the negative aliens, to activate the ego of an individual. And even people that believe they're in contact with positive aliens can often have their egos activated. And this could be done by negative aliens pretending to be positive aliens, or the person is just inclined to be a narcissist and egotistical, so when good aliens happen to rock up and introduce themselves and engage the individual in conversation, telepathically or in person, whatever the case may be, or in a mystical vision, well, that person takes it and runs with it, the egos are activated, and everything goes pear-shaped from there. Because once the ego is activated, that individual, whether they're a host or not, becomes putty in the hands of the negative forces. And especially if they're a host for one or more negative entities. And like I said a moment ago, these people are prepped from birth. Basically, they're designed, even before they're conceived, to do exactly what they're doing, causing strife, disharmony, chaos, discordance within the UFO field. And how do you know these people? Well, they're pathological liars. They can look in your face, they can smile at you. No, James, I never said that. No, Evie, I never said that. No, Steve, I never said that. But behind your back, they're just lying through their teeth, they're lying to everybody, And the one thing about it also is that their ego betrays them. They're constantly big-noting themselves. They're constantly trying to big-shot others with how much they know, how special they think they are, usually because the ETs have patted them on the head and told them that they're special. And being gullible fools, of course, they go along with that. They don't stop and think, well, I'm special because I'm a manifestation of divine source. That's what makes me special. Oh, no, because they're projecting outwards. They're locked into savior mode, kind of like a residual effect of all the apocalyptic religions that William Bramley talked about. So they project outwards. And in this case, it's friendly ETs patted them on the head and told them they're special. So they're special. Instead of being special because they're from divine source, they're special because ETs told them. And these people, they get their fragile egos amped up, and they go around and they believe that their story and their experiences supersedes everyone else's, that no one else has a worthwhile thing to say, that their story is more significant, has more truth, more validity than anyone else's. And they're ego-driven, narcissistic, and they're pathological liars. And they just love creating strife and acrimony. They love spreading innuendos and gossiping, turning people against each other, divide and conquer. They love to get into your kitchen. There's an old term in baseball. They don't use it anymore. You hardly hear it. Oh, he really got into the guy's kitchen. What that meant was a pitcher would pitch to a batter inside, usually fastballs, inner part of the plate, back the batter off the plate, make him feel uncomfortable, make him fearful of being drilled by the baseball, i.e., the pitcher got into his kitchen. Well, some of these disruptors, they like to get into your kitchen. They like to ingratiate themselves into your life, where after a while, you can't seem to get rid of them. They're just always there. They're in your house. They've ingratiated themselves amongst your friends. And as I said earlier, all of this is exacerbated by the internet. The internet makes it far more easier for these disruptors to do their dirty work. And so, those of you out there that are putting together UFO conferences, putting together UFO abductee support groups, contactee support groups, whatever the case may be, always, always, always vet the people before you let them into the group. And don't allow someone, however well-meaning, however well-intentioned, however good-natured and good-hearted, to bring someone into the fold without meeting that person first, without talking to that person first, without sussing that person out energetically first. This used to be a problem when Eve Lorgan and I had an abductee MyLab support group way back when. We had a larger abductee support group. Basically, people who were by and large alien abductees, and some claimed to have, you know, contact with benevolent ETs, spiritually evolved ETs. And it was always those meetings that were the most acrimonious, because those special, gifted, chosen ones who felt they were in contact with the spiritually evolved, higher dimensional ETs, they looked down on the rest of us who claimed to have experiences or knew we had experiences with negative beings. They looked at us as being spiritually retarded, vibrationally challenged, whatever the euphemism was. Oh, you people that have these negative experiences, you're such low vibratory, you're such a low vibratory state, and you projected fear out, and you drew these experiences to you, blah, 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 quack, quack, quack. And it's interesting that these people, and it's almost invariably people, not always, okay, that's an absolutist statement, let me rephrase that. A lot of these people that cause the most trouble in the UFO community, in these support groups, in these UFO groups, these UFO discussion groups, often is not their people that push the positive alien message, the warm and fuzzy space brother message. The aliens chose me because they want me to spread this important message to help humanity evolve and ascend to the next level. And they've chosen moi, me, thumping on the chest like Tarzan, me, to pass their message on to all of you lowly, hairless primates, right? That's the real message. And it was usually the starry-eyed New Age la-di-das that caused the problems in the abductee support groups, because they'd immediately, like bare fangs, and the claws would emerge whenever anybody shared a, you know, negative ET experience. Because they were projecting out all the latent trauma and not so latent trauma from their own negative ET experiences, which they hadn't quite resolved and worked out because they were in denial under my control. Well, it would manifest in the form of, you know, anger and hostility towards those who were talking about negative alien experiences. And they're acting out precisely how they've been programmed to act out. That's what they're supposed to do in an abductee support group setting. Create conflict, disharmony, factionalize and atomize the group. So you have cliques form, the positives on one side, I call them the false positives, and on the other you have these fear-based, fearful, spiritually retarded, vibrationally challenged, fearful abductees. Victims, right? So that's what would often happen in these groups. And then what would happen is the starry-eyed New Agers, the New Age la-di-das, the ones who were all starry-eyed and speaking metaphysical riddles, right? They're just always blissing out because they're so positive, everything. And then the first mention of negative ETs, the claws come out, right? Totally hypocritical, completely contradictory behavior. Those are the ones that tend to bring in more people like themselves. Oh, hi, Eve and James. You know, they come rocking up to a meeting with someone that you'd never seen before. Oh, here's my friend, Jill. She's had contact experiences too. She's been in contact with these beings from, you know, this, that, or the other constellation. And she's spreading a special message of theirs she wants to share with the group, right? And that's how these infiltrations occur, how factions form, how after a while there's more starry-eyed New Agers than there are people that know what the hell is really going on. I was once part of a speakers panel in, where was this, Memphis, Tennessee, Mississippi, I can't remember when. Eddie Middleton put it out. He sponsored it. Eddie Middleton was the founder of the original Night Search Paranormal Network, NSPN, the worldwide leader in paranormal sports reporting. Just a joke there. NSPN, Night Search Paranormal Network. Evie Lorgan was an alumnus. I was, a number of other people. The late Bill Pollock, the late Vance Davis. Anyhow, Eddie put together a couple of conferences, and I was a speaker at both of them. And on one of them, I was part of a speakers panel. And what was interesting was there was this woman there. What was her name? Pat something or other. But she was a starry-eyed New Age la-di-da. And she thought that she was some kind of Palladian walk-in or something. And I've had people walk up to me at UFO conferences. Hi, I'm Stacy, and I'm a Palladian hybrid walk-in. Right? Really, they used to do this kind of thing back in the old days. In the 90s and the 80s at the UFO conferences in California. You know, before people like E.B. Lorgan and I dignified the proceedings by actually dressing up and trying to look as sharp as we can, you know, people used to show up at these conferences. I'm not bagging people for dressing any which way, but, you know, you only have one chance to make a good first impression, so make it. So, you know, right, you know, people are more casual about these things nowadays, and that's fine. But in the old days, you know, people would rock up to a conference dressed in tie-dyed t-shirts and with pyramids affixed to their heads. And then people would wonder why no one took these people seriously, right? Then you'd have people that rock up to you and introduce themselves as Palladian hybrid walk-ins. Gee, you know, I'm an Elvis walk-in. I mean, how do you respond to that, right? So there was a woman like that at this panel in either Mississippi or Memphis. And she kept referring to herself as a Johns Hopkins girl, because I guess that made her sound special or something. Oh, yes, they kept testing me mentally, psychologically, physically, and they kept remarking about how unusual and special I am. And so she came to refer to herself as a Johns Hopkins girl. And she did so over and over again. And this woman was in such denial about negative experiences that in one of the experiences that she was describing, she said that her own daughter was not even able to walk after an alien visitation. After the aliens had dropped off her daughter, she found her daughter crawling along on the ground, unable to walk. In her words, Pat's words, her legs had turned to jelly, right? And this is after this Pat woman was telling us over and over and over, going on and on and on about how special and spiritually evolved and benevolent her ET group was, right? And then suddenly there's an abduction at her house. The ETs take her daughter, they return her, and her daughter, who was already walking and had been walking for some time, you know, by that point, had momentarily lost the ability to walk. In Pat's words, her legs had been reduced to jelly, I'm paraphrasing, and she was crawling along, pulling herself along by her arms. Now, Barbie Bartholik was sitting beside me. I wish some of you had known Barbie the way that I had, and Evie Lorgan had. My friend Carla in Florida knows her and knew her. Barbie was she was an angelic soul. She was an angel. Cosmic combat medic is how I described her, the way she would heal all these people that suffered all this terrific trauma from being abducted by negative aliens. And Barbie had this kind of quizzical expression on her face. Wide-eyed. Almost childlike. Barbie used to refer to herself as the Lucy Ricardo of UFO researchers. Because she loved to laugh, she loved to tell jokes, completely at variance from the negative image portrayed of Barbie by all the New Age la-di-das who said she was fear-based and always talked about the scary lizard people and only talked about negative things. Well, in actual fact, Barbie was the Lucy Ricardo of UFO researchers, of abduction researchers. She had red hair, she had an unforgettable laugh, she had a wonderful sense of humor. And I could see that Barbie was bursting at the seams. She was right next to me, and she was trying hard not to laugh, right? But she managed to stifle herself enough to ask Patton, well, if these aliens are so benevolent and so positive, why did they do that to your daughter to the point where her legs have been turned into jelly, your own words? And Pat's response, oh, she said dismissively with a wave of a hand, oh, that was another group of aliens. You see how that works? Same household, young daughter given birth to by Pat. Alien abductions work multi-generationally. Pat's ego was activated, Johns Hopkins girl. And the level of denial, the level of mind control is such that when Barbie points out this blatant contradiction, Pat is blowing smoke about the good ETs in her life and how beneficial they have been to her, how much they've helped her, even helped her in her life, helped her in her career, etc., etc. And then she tells a story about how her daughter's legs were reduced to jelly. And then when Barbie calls her out on it, well, don't you think that's kind of odd that these positive ETs would do that to your own daughter? Oh, that was a different group of ETs. Well, why didn't her group of good ETs stop these bad ETs from messing with her daughter, right? I mean, that's what I was thinking. I didn't say it. But this is the kind of mindset we're dealing with, folks. These are the kind of people that are turned loose on the UFO community. And now, because of the internet, they pollute all these message boards and forums and UFO alien groups, all these exopolitics groups and disclosure groups. Andrew Hennessy, an old Dragon Slayer mate of mine from the old days, you're going to be hearing from another Dragon Slayer in this week's podcast, Neil Cruz. He is another Dragon Slayer from the old days. Wes Penro was on there, Laura Leone, Evie Lorgan, Tom Montauk. We had a good bunch. We called her, was the founder of the Dragon Slayers. Anyway, Andrew Hennessy always calls out the hypocrisy of the disclosure and exopolitics movement, because he calls them out on account of the fact they refuse to talk about negative alien abduction experiences. They only want to talk about New Age la-di-da crap, right? Isn't it something of a paradox that the ones that are always blowing smoke about how positive the ETs are, how friendly and how nice they are, and how much we need them in order to spiritually evolve, those people are the first ones, when you start talking about negative ET experiences, their claws come out. They bare their fangs. They practically do a shapeshift right in front of you and want to tear your throat out. Yeah, real spiritual. Real lovey-dovey. Oh, you know, turn on your heart light. Let it shine wherever you go. I just think of that E.T. movie, right? And the old Neil Diamond song. Makes me feel warm and fuzzy. Just be prepared for a real crap storm if you let these people in your life. If you're in the UFO field, if you're a UFO researcher, alien abductee, my lab, person who puts conferences or lectures together, sponsors, promotes them, and you let one of these people in your life, these are the type of people that will sit in the audience of a UFO lecture and interrupt over and over and over, ask all these questions, start talking about their experiences, because it's always about them. It's not about the speaker who was flown in to give a lecture. No, that's beside the point. The audience, everything is there for them. The self-indulgent, narcissistic, hosted individual who's the disruptor in our example. So you'll be sitting there just wanting to hear what this guy or gal's got to say, who's slated to give this lecture, and this person in our example will just start interfering, interrupting, talking about their own experiences, asking irrelevant questions, and just being a disruptive force. So even a UFO conference or lecture promoter has to worry about these people. You're going to regret it big time. And the thing about them is they don't stop. They'll just keep doing it. You'll just keep hearing more and more about all the trouble they're causing. And they'll just deny everything. Even when you've got the goods on them. Even when you've got all the nasty grams that they sent to somebody on Facebook, or all the lies they spread about somebody on Facebook or on Twitter or in mobile phone text messages. Even if the proof is right there, proof in the pudding, so to speak, they will deny, because you're dealing with a non-human intelligence. You're dealing essentially with an alien intelligence in the guise of a human being. And their role is to create disruption, discordance, disharmony, infighting, acrimony. And so I encourage those of you out there that put conferences together, that put lectures together, A, don't let these people anywhere near your operation. B, if you do get them on, right, don't be shy about getting rid of them and saying, no, you're not on the team anymore. You don't get to play. Remember when you were young and a neighbor kid would come over the house and knock on a door and your folks would answer and they'd go, the kid would go, is Billy home? Yes, Billy is home. Can Billy come out to play? Well, if you're a conference promoter, if you're a facilitator for an alien abduction support group, this is what you tell these people that cause all these problems. You don't get to play. It's as simple as that. And don't let all these unresolved issues, these shame-based issues, prevent you from setting proper psychological boundaries, proper energetic boundaries. I'm going to talk in a future commentary about what it's like to come under the malign influence of a demon-infested person. Because, woo, it's a doozy. I mean, loss of will, loss of volition, nausea. I mean, it really sucks, and I've gone through it. And the only good thing that came out of that is I could warn other people about what it's like to fall under the malign influence of a demon-infested person. A wise person learns the mistakes that someone else made, right? So they don't have to make the exact same mistakes and unnecessarily put themselves through a lot of misery and grief and a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth. These disruptors in the UFO community are everywhere. And there's one gal out there, she is a demoness. I think I've talked about her before. Every time a female MyLab pops up on the radar and starts talking about her experiences, she's attacked by this woman, right? Every single time. And she has hordes of followers, probably sock puppets or mindless minions, that parrot her every word who support her and forward her post, etc., etc. And every time a new female MyLab monarch, SRA survivor, take your pick, every time they break the surface, come out from under the woodwork, start talking about their experiences, this woman attacks them every time. She attacks Sarah Stanga, who I consider to be legitimate MyLab, one of the most important MyLabs to come out in the recent past because of all the harassment she endured, never mind all the hardcore interference from Black Ops and from the Draco and from the cults. Never mind all that. But on top of that, she had to put up with all this harassment from this demoness woman. Well, as a result, Sarah just dropped out of the picture. She's out of the picture now. And if any of my listeners out there are in comms with Sarah, please, I was in email comms with Sarah for a period of time back in the day. I'd really like to get back in touch with her. If she's in a good place emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, where she's left all this stuff behind, that's fine. I don't want to bother her. But if she, you know, wants a friendly, sympathetic person to talk to, who understands her and believes her, and we had a good rapport going back in the day, I would really like to get back in combo with her, because I consider Sarah Stanga to be legitimate and a true heroine. So, a word of caution for those of you in the field. Set up proper boundaries. Make sure that if someone wants to bring a new person to the group, I'm talking about like a support group setting here, make sure that you meet this person first, apart from the group. Meet them for lunch. Meet them for breakfast. Suss them out yourself. Find out if they're legitimate. Check out their energy. Find out what their belief systems are. Some of these starry-eyed new agers, they have the messiah complex, where they, you know, feel they have this need, this compulsion to spread this ET message, right? Look at the whole Disclosure crowd. What a joke that is. Disclosure. What a joke. Who's the big hero of Disclosure movement? John Podesta. Enough said. So, screen these people out. Only let those that are of good heart, good character, integrity, open-minded, non-judgmental, not intolerant of other people, not easily triggered. Because if you're an abduction support group facilitator or someone who works with alien abductees in my labs, call yourself what you will, you have to be sensitive enough to know when you should not allow people to mix, right? There's some people that are so fragile, they're so fragmented, but they're sincerely desirous and earnest in their desire for help. They really want to be helped. They really want validation, and not in a needy, codependent way, but they're really seeking out people who can help them. And sometimes people like that are not necessarily the type you mix in with a group immediately. Because if some of the people in the group start talking about hardcore stuff, it may trigger the hell out of this new person who they may not have gotten to that level yet. You have to meet people at their needs. You can't just lump everyone all together and assume that they're going to, you know, mesh and gel just because they seem to have all the same beliefs and experiences. That's not the case. That's why Eve Lorgan and I set up a separate MyLab group that met in the high desert near Victorville, California, as well as in Fallbrook, California, in North County, San Diego. That was like what we considered our hardcore group, our core group, where we can talk about anything. We didn't have to worry about triggering anybody or pissing off some starry-eyed New Ager. We just spoke from the heart, and we shared the latest intel, the latest int on stuff that's been going on with us. So be mindful of that, that just because someone has had experiences, you cannot necessarily lump them in with others. Maybe sometime further down the track, you can say, okay, you know, maybe after a month or two, you know, of talking to this person and working with this person, exchanging emails with this person, maybe it's a good time to introduce them to the group, right? Or to a certain person in the group whose experiences are similar to the person who's showed up on the radar lately, right? One has to be adroit in dealing with these issues. We're not all part of a hive consciousness. And there are those out there that push the alien hive consciousness message that we're all supposed to be like the Borg and think alike, and we're all going to have the exact same future, the exact same destiny. That's just not the case. Some are going to have one destiny and others are going to have an entirely different destiny. Because what we're talking about ultimately is the dismantling of this wretched soul harvesting, soul recycling agenda. And if it's not done, or if someone doesn't do their own self-work, others may break out of this soul harvesting system, but a lot of others may not, and they'll just be hatched right back into not just the earth, but like a lower, denser version of it, like the direction it seems to be going. So keep all that in mind. All right, we've reached the end of this week's segment of Bartley's commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. And once again, Happy New Year's to one and all. Wherever you may be, dear listeners, have a very pleasant day. Have a very pleasant evening.